find that there are people who want to go beyond the superficial and engineer for themselves a genuine lifestyle. Now, what is a genuine lifestyle? If I ask you, what would you say? A genuine lifestyle for yourself.
Go by your heart.
Go by your heart. Would you like? Get a stethoscope and hear your heartbeat. Knowing who you are, does that mean, like, your name is? Vic. Vic, okay. Does that mean, I know I'm Vic, so. What more could you say about yourself than that? Vic, you're a Queenslander. Does it go any deeper? Spirit soul. Okay, that's interesting. Anyone else? Genuine lifestyle.
I would say one of the lifestyle, but a lifestyle that is more suitable. A lifestyle more suitable.
For your heart.
Yeah, something closer.
Low cholesterol diet. Just ask it. Genuine nice. What's an ingenuine lifestyle?
Probably a little what's going on with
okay, fair
enough. Well, maybe I'm related to what comes for particular purpose.
So is that purpose different for everyone? So you don't feel there's a common purpose? Love. Is there a common agreement on what love is? Humanity comes together and works for the common good.
Yeah.
What about the other species that make up the majority of the residents of the planet?
Well, that would include respecting life on Earth. So far as it's possible, you know, like I said, it's a sphere based on exploitation. Vegetables are exploited, like everything in the forest is where they've got other living entities. Seems to me to be a very bad. one way, you don't have to without rules.
But a genuine nice guy. Understanding how to be content. Did you say genuine life. Knowing yourself as the soul, so you feel that you are a soul.
Yes.
Now, what does a soul do?
Well, at the moment, my soul is experiencing that present life in here and probably in other places because we cannot perceive what the soul truly is at the time as I see it. My soul is experiencing this life on this earth plus.
Why? Loved unconditionally?
Selfless.
Unconditionally, yes. You've got to use the right words. You know, that's the truth. This is your companion here. Very nice. Have you loved unconditionally? Expectation are conditions. All right, just walk in the middle of it. We figure we just plunge right into it. It's a good, interesting experiment. Someone just walks right in. Have you loved her unconditionally? What do you think? Unconditional love. Don't act. If you don't like something, say it. Anything society might say. Well, you're a real rebel. Anything society. lifestyle. You have to speak louder. Subject matter a bit more deeply. If we're going to discover what is a genuine lifestyle, we have to see ourselves in relation to something. Now, how is it that we can judge ourselves? What's the standard for judging what is genuine or not genuine? Is there just the standard of ourselves? I decide everything. This year I think peaches are genuine. Next year I think grapes are genuine. Is it also arbitrary? Or is there a higher standard beyond us which establishes what is genuine? What do you think? You see, he has his idea, hobbies. Someone else had the idea of unconditional love, even though everyone's suffering conditions. And so many different angles. It seems that if it's left to us, tiny living entities, limited living entities, there's not going to be any agreement. There's not going to be harmony. Who decides? Just like you mentioned, harmony. Who decides when everything is harmonious? You might consider something harmonious and someone else finds chaos. So, is there a standard beyond ourselves for understanding what is genuine or not? Let's look at that question a different way. Does anyone here feel strongly that they are the everything? The all-inclusive. Anyone here feel like that? No? No. No one here feels like they are the everything.
The opposite, actually. And extremely insignificant.
So everyone here, in other words, no one here will claim to be unlimited. Is that so? All right, then, that means you all feel that you are limited, yes? Everybody agrees you're all limited?
Yes.
In size, limited in strength, limited in intelligence, yes? Okay, so, you all agree you're limited living entities. Even your lifespan is limited. So, limited means you're a part. You're not the everything. Everyone agrees? You're a part. Real hard in here. You feel you're unlimited. But you feel you're unlimited. Really? So you really feel that you're unlimited in strength, in intelligence, beauty. Between thinking you're unlimited and thinking they're parts of you that you haven't discovered yet. You understand what I'm saying? So I think you are saying that you're open to the fact that there are strengths and characteristics about you that you haven't discovered. But that's very different from saying you're unlimited. Okay? You agree? Alright. So no one here feels they're unlimited. Alright. So then, your next question has to be, next question you ask yourself has to be, since you are a part, as you said, you feel a very insignificant inconsequential. Since you are a part, what is it that you are a part of? Once you start understanding what we are a part of, then you can start to see whether we are genuine or not. So what is the greater reality that we are a part of?
Well, I say that in some traditions, I say that God is omnipresent, omnipresent everywhere, all the time, and aware of the past of that. We just sort of like God in the earth, but we're part of something that is omnipresent.
Oh, what is the nature of that something? Anyone else? What is that? What is it that we are a part of? What would you say? The unconditional love. Yeah.
Well, I can actually relate to what someone said. Is that I think we are little tiny creatures which are carrying part of thought in ourselves.
Part of?
God.
Who?
God. G-O-D.
Who's that?
God. Krishna.
You have to introduce me to that person. I see. Just locked up inside me?
In your heart, yeah, a part of you.
In my heart.
Yeah. Well, that's what I believe.
You look in there, you had open heart surgery and you looked in and saw it.
No, he's talking to me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He?
He, she, it doesn't matter.
Right.
I
just want to make sure you weren't an oppressed female.
I love you, female.
So, what you're saying is there's somebody there in your heart. He, she, whatever, right? Reality that we are a part of.
Unconditional creation.
Unconditional creation. Oh, that's a good one. Unconditional creation. Okay. Now we have to figure out what unconditional love is. Now we're on to unconditional creation.
The creation that never ceases. It's always in the process of creating and then destroying and creating again.
Okay. Now let's focus on the actual issue. What is the nature of the ultimate reality that we are part of? Whether you call it God or this or that, we're trying to understand the characteristics so that we can establish our relationship as part of that ultimate reality. Fair enough? Okay. Any idea what is the nature of the ultimate reality? No idea. The nature of ultimate reality that we're all a part of.
I really don't know.
The big pizza in the sky. What are those olives in the big pizza in the sky?
From my own direct personal experience, I haven't been able to work out very much about the absolute nature of reality. I guess the closest that I've come is reading the thoughts of other people, and then I've had to sort of weigh up in my limited intelligence.
Good excuse. The more you try to understand it, the less you know. Don't bother. Yeah, people write books and say that kind of thing. Real spiritual knowledge is not in a book. They write a book and tell you that, then you buy it. How about how you cool? Let me finish. Did we get to you yet? The nature of ultimate reality?
The nature of ultimate reality is what we live in.
Just the world we live in. Nature of ultimate reality.
Something we all need to talk about.
nature of reality, I think of reality as what's real. I mean, this is real too, but it's not real because it's going to end.
Is your body real?
No, that is, but it's not real. It's kind of love.
So what is real in a capital R?
Well, love.
And how do you love?
Yeah.
Yeah. Most people love with their body, right? But the body is just not real, so. What are you going to do?
Well, you just said the body's not real. I find it is and isn't. I mean, it is what we have it. One day it's going to not be here. But hopefully, sometimes we believe the soul goes on, even when we've got the body. But I think sometimes the main thing people want to find is who they are, right? And relate to in what they're fulfilling their purpose on.
All right, so
according to who you are as an individual.
We're trying to get at this understanding of what is ultimate reality. Where would we get that information from? It would seem to me, as I was explaining yesterday for those who are here, that it's quite obvious the best way to understand ultimate reality is to take information from the ultimate reality itself. If you can do that, then your life really becomes advantageous. So it's quite apparent, to me anyway, that if you can get knowledge about ultimate reality directly from the ultimate reality, then you're onto something. Otherwise, I have my opinion, you have your opinion, everybody's got their own opinion. Now, let's just take a look at our existence, our bodies. If you can understand yourself as a part of the ultimate reality, as a part of the Supreme, then you have a better chance of understanding the Supreme. Just like if you can understand a drop of seawater, there's a good chance you're going to understand what is the ocean. So just look at yourself. First, you have to be very clear. Are you the body, or are you something more than the body? How many of you here feel, we are the body? Raise your hand.
I'm stuck in here, so as I was
right. Are you the body? You said, I'm stuck in here. Are you that thing you're stuck in? Yes or no? Okay. Does anyone here think they're simply the body? They're just bad chemicals. Alright. So, what about the mind? Do you think that you're just the mind? Chemicals and the mind. Or is there a spiritual dimension about you? Indeed, do you have a spiritual identity? Anyone feel to have a spiritual identity? Okay. Now, how do you act according to your spiritual identity? I mean, you just kind of walk up to somebody and say, excuse me, I have a spiritual identity. And what do you do with your spiritual identity? What do you do? Yeah, you say you have a spiritual identity. What do you do with it? You wash and hang out to dry, or?
Well, I guess I try to feed it.
You have a spiritual identity? How do you take care of it?
I'm trying to
spend money on it, or?
Yes, I just spend money on it, buying books I want to read, towards which I'm guided by my conscience, and I'm trying to talk to my conscience, and that might be.
talking to your conscience.
Yes, well, I'm trying to listen to my conscience when my conscience is saying to me, oh, well, that's not a good thing to do, so don't do it. Sometimes I'm not following the voice of conscience.
But how do you know your conscience is right?
How
do you know your conscience is right?
There
could be many voices inside you.
Yeah, yeah, I know, but I can feel it. With my soul, is it peace? Like, I don't feel that funny uneasiness in my heart. It means that I'm falling into the world. That's the only way I can tell.
For sure.
I'm trying to go by the feeling. If I'm disturbed and stressed, it means that I'm doing something wrong.
So you're going by physiological feelings.
It's not physiological. It's on all levels, I think. Body, mind, soul.
Sure.
It's not just a warm
feeling in the bottom of your stomach.
No, it's just right here in my chest.
In this region right here.
Yeah.
It's a warm feeling there.
Yeah.
It's physiological. One famous author, probably some of you have read his books. He's kind of like a top Ayurveda teacher. Written many books. People have purchased millions of copies. He writes that if you want to know what is correct, consult your body. If your body gives a good feeling, then you're doing the right thing. If the body gives a painful feeling, then you're doing the wrong thing. Would you all agree to that? Consult your body as the guide for what is right or wrong? Regardless, would you consult the feelings of your body to decide what is right or wrong?
Yeah, if there's some fire in front of you.
No, this is about life's ultimate question. It's not about, you know, whether you should be 1 meter away from the fire or 2 meters.
I don't know. When you talk about the Ayurvedic, it's called the word. But you must have stated it considering, like, mercy. Like, if you take a tablet and...
I didn't say he was an Ayurvedic expert. No, I said he was a top Ayurvedic expert. I'm telling you what he said. You want to know what to do with your life? Consult your body. If it's a good feeling, you're doing the right thing. If your body gives a painful feeling, then you're making a mistake about your life. None of you would go for that.
Well, in other words... You could say that, like, maybe... Like, in a sense of having a holistic lifestyle where you work on all aspects of your lifestyle in a holistic way, like your spiritual, your physical, your life, your environment, your friends, company, your teaching, school teaching, all sorts of things. You work a holistic view. You work on your physical health, your mental health, your spiritual
health. And what is the goal of all that? Then you spend your whole life looking after yourself, quote unquote, holistically, and then what?
Well, we're all going to drop the body.
And then?
So, what do you put?
And then?
You have to do something while you're here.
And then? Now, let's say you've lived your whole life holistically. Now what? What comes next?
A new life.
A new life, living holistically, yeah. What kind of body you get in your next life?
Well, it depends on my car.
What kind of body you get in your next life?
Cat.
You like that?
No, that's not anymore. I think I've already been there.
Yes, this is a very important point. You have to judge your progress in this life and your relationship with the ultimate reality. Looking at what your future is going to be. Is it so that you only should be concerned with this life, or should you be looking at your next life too? When you have genuine spiritual knowledge, when you understand the ultimate reality properly, you'll see that according to your actions in this life, you're fashioning your next life. You can see the whole system. This is explained by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. Best explanation. That your actions in this life shape your future, in that you must get reactions for all of your actions. So at the time of death, your mind takes you, the spirit soul, to the next body. Krishna explains this in Bhagavad Gita. The way you lived in this life shapes a certain mentality as part of the reactions, your mentality. At the time of death, your mentality takes on an appropriate body in your next life. Now, to have a human body is very rare. You can look around in nature and see that human beings are far outnumbered. So many other species of life. So, to get a human body is a very special thing. But you don't have to get a human body in your next life. You have to deserve the human body. So, a human body is a special gift from the Supreme, from Krishna, so that you can have advanced or developed consciousness for understanding what is the ultimate reality. Other species can't do that.
Another question. If at the end of this life somebody gets put into the body of an animal, how is it that in that life somebody will try and get put into a human form when animals have to keep on one level?
Right. Animals don't get karma. They're moved along automatically by nature. No, you're moved up through the ranks by the laws of nature. Animals don't have karma. Human beings, because they have developed consciousness, they get a reaction, karmic reaction. Animals don't have karma. But if you lose your human body and go into the animal species or plant species or fish species, it's a great loss. How do you lose your human form of life? By not using it to understand what is the ultimate reality. Then nature takes away your opportunity.
So it's the theory that, like, to become human in this lifetime, that you must have shaped your way right up.
Yes.
And
countless births. So if you waste the human life for things the animals can do, this is a great catastrophe. What do the animals do that humans can't compete with? So say some things that animals do.
That humans can't
have. Yeah, in terms of efficiency or power or... Well, just like...
Can I get caught up in emotions? Can I get caught up in emotions?
But look at the basic animal activity that humans share, eating. You can't eat just anything and everything without getting sick. Quite a few animals can do that. Sleeping. So many animals can sleep much longer than a human being.
So it's the perception that, according to the other people, that it works your way up. In this lifetime you were born, you pretty much have like a raw consciousness, like pretty much an open slate where you don't really have any concept of a higher being. Or do you? Do you intuitively? Or do you have to find?
The purpose of having a human body is that with your developed consciousness you understand what is the ultimate reality. That is your responsibility as a human being. It's like when you get a car, you have a responsibility to drive properly. Similarly, when you get the human body, you have the responsibility to understand what is the nature of ultimate reality. I mean, we don't have enough Bhagavad Gita's here. Otherwise, I would pass one out to everyone. We just have about five here. It's not enough. So, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that those who are bewildered don't understand how they got the present body. They don't understand what their next body is going to be. They have no vision or comprehension why they are changing from one body to another. This is a great tragedy. So, the first thing we need to understand about ultimate reality is that something is forcing us to change bodies. You have more? Okay, pass them out. There's some over here too. Yeah.
So it means that there's no free will.
We'll get to that. Here come more. Sanskrit. I don't expect you to. Utkaman tamsatam bhavi munjanam bhavanandatam ramuda nanu pashyati pashyati jana chakra. Someone would like to read the translation? Bhumi voice.
Utkaman tam quitting the body.
No, you can just read the translation. No, see, it says translation.
The foolish cannot understand how a living entity can quit his body, nor can they understand what sort of body he endures under the spell of the most of nature. But one whose eyes are trained in knowledge can see all this.
This is the predicament of 99.9% of people today. They don't understand how they got this body. They don't understand how the body is changing, how they get another body. They don't understand how the whole process is going on, forced by material nature. Therefore, there's no question of them being able to understand the ultimate reality, because they don't understand the immediate reality. If you have a body, how many of you remember choosing your body? Anyone? Anyone say, I want to be a Queenslander? I want to be a man or a woman. Anyone remember choosing? Anyone remember choosing your family? It's a birthday. You remember choosing? How did that happen? You kind of went down a list and said, I'll take this one.
See, if you look,
Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? You're reading from there. Okay, we'll get to that. Don't jump ahead. One thing at a time.
How is it that some people remember about their past lives?
It's like an ability that some people have. They don't remember everything. They remember something.
Yeah.
It's not that important because it's like you're remembering, I did this in my life in the past, I did that. But how do you make a solution to the whole process of changing one body after another? That's the most important thing to understand. Yeah. What are you going to do about your future? Past is already done. So you remember your past life. Okay, great. Now what?
What was that question? What is the solution to changing one body?
Yes, yes. Can you read the purport, please? Do you have enough light there to see? Yes, yes. You have a loud voice.
The word
Jnana Chakshusa
is very significant. Without knowledge, one cannot understand how a living entity leaves his present body, nor what form of body he is going to take in the next life, nor even why he is living in a particular type of body. This requires a great amount of knowledge understood from Bhagavad Gita and similar literatures heard from a
bonafide
spiritual master. One who has trained to perceive all these things is fortunate. Every living entity is quitting his body under certain circumstances. He is living under certain circumstances and he is enjoying under certain circumstances under the spell of material nature. As a result, he is suffering different kinds of happiness and distress under the illusion of sense enjoyment. The persons who are everlastingly filled by lust and desire lose all power to understand their change of body and their stay in a particular body. They cannot comprehend it. Those who have developed spiritual knowledge, however, can see that the spirit is different from the body and is changing its body and enjoying its different ways. A person in such knowledge can understand how the conditioned living entity is suffering in this material existence. Therefore, those who are highly developed in Krishna consciousness try their best to give this knowledge to the people in general, for their conditional life is very much troublesome. They should come out of it and be Krishna conscious and liberate themselves to transfer to the spiritual world.
So, you read very nicely. Remember the sentence you read in the middle? As a result, he is suffering different kinds of happiness and distress under the illusion of sense enjoyment. How does that sound? Very accurate description of how life is lived these days. Just see yourself. You're experiencing different kinds of happiness and distress, while all the time you're under the illusion that sense enjoyment is the appropriate goal of life. So, by that illusion, you lose all power to understand your change of body. What to speak of understanding ultimate reality? In other words, we have to do first things first. Try to understand first the immediate reality that you have this body, it's forced upon you, and you're forced to change it. How are you going to stop that?
Well, I was doing some studying just recently on the theory of that we're all controlled, that we have desires for the nature of that these things are okay in minimum, but if they're out of hand, it's too much.
What things are okay to minimum?
That we all have access to human nature, we have a certain amount of anger, greed, lust, attachment.
All right, but don't mind me asking you, but who decides what the minimum is? The maximum.
What we all decide that for ourselves.
Oh, that's sounds like a lot of problems because I want to have a different vision.
But in a sense,
so once again, we're getting back to the original problem: who decides the standards? What is genuine or not? Now, let me explain why I asked you: do you think you are limited or unlimited? If you are a limited entity, how can you have it all figured out? You can only perceive in a limited way. Therefore, you see, if we're at all going to understand ultimate reality, we have to get knowledge from the unlimited. That is the advantage of Krishna consciousness and Bhagavad Gita. You're not taking knowledge from a limited source. With limited knowledge and with limited perception, you can't understand everything. There's always going to be something beyond your grasp. But if you take your knowledge from the unlimited source, then you can be on safe ground. So in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna presents what is the ultimate reality and how you can experience that. Not by blind faith, but how you can actually experience the ultimate spiritual reality. Why take it from Krishna? Because in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains his unlimited nature. So if you take knowledge from the unlimited, then you've got everything covered. Then you're safe. That is the point. But
yeah,
we can see.
What is Krishna like? That's what's pretty well.
Oh, very good question.
What was the question?
Asking, what is Krishna Loka supposed to be about? He's asking about the spiritual world. But I'm saying, before we jump to that level, let's understand what's right in front of our eyes. We don't understand our change of body. Why are we changing bodies? What's given us this particular body? What will our next body be? Right then and there, you can see control. And that forces you to think, what is the ultimate control? How many of you ask to grow older? Remember? Any of you ask to grow older? Any of you ask, when you're sick, did you ask for it? But it's forced upon you. Why? How? So if you can understand these things, the immediate reality, then you're well on your way to understanding the ultimate reality. Because these things of bodily changes forced upon us indicate that we're not in control. It's a hard thing for people to understand. We're not in control. Because everyone has their hopes, right? You all have hopes for this, for that, for unconditional love, for hobbies, or whatever. Everyone's got hopes. But at the same time, you're completely controlled. That teaches you something about the nature of ultimate reality. Immediately, you can see we're under control. Just that fact alone should cause you to inquire, what is the nature of this reality that's controlling us? And is there something beyond the control?
Isn't it that sign about having the wisdom to try some things you can and understand things you can't try?
How do you know what you can't change?
And having the wisdom to know the difference.
How do you know what you can't change? That requires education. Now, Krishna's teaching you in Bhagavad Gita, you can stop the changes of the body.
Well, if you think about the things that you can change, well, the rest you can't.
How do you know what you can change? Just like old age. Can you stop old age?
No.
You can. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says you can stop old age. Can you stop death?
No.
Yes, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, you can put a stop to the cycle of old age, disease, birth, and death. This is what I mean about limited knowledge and unlimited knowledge. According to limited knowledge, we're helpless. No, you just do the best you can in this short life, and then who knows what happens next? How many of you are prepared to live your life in that way? Any? Used to be. Before history. Okay. Why? You're a young lady. There's so much fun in the world for you. What are you doing thinking like this? I worry about whether it makes sense or not. Just enjoy your senses. You know that you're more than the body. That's not such a nice thing for a young person like you to be thinking about it. It would ruin all your fun, thinking you're more than the body. Yeah, you know what I mean. Why? Is there something more than that? No, I'm just saying,
because the typical society form of fun, to those who are seeking consciousness, gets boring after all. To those who aren't, who are habitually in unconsciousness or talk about it, it gets boring for them. Or that if it does get boring, they just keep lying to themselves and keep pushing yourself out going, yeah, I'm not boring, but I'm not willing to step out and sit and try and find what this whole existence is all about.
How old and did you come to these conclusions?
Not sure.
But now, where do you go?
Yeah.
It's one thing to realize the matrix of illusion and how you're going to get out of it.
Exactly. I think for quite a while I've come to that, that point of stepping outside the matrix. And then I've come back here. And it just feels like the last
very good. So then you are a good, very, you are a very appropriate candidate for Krishna consciousness. Congratulations. Anyone else who has come to this point? Why not? You look like a successful lady, you know. Chic debonair, you know. Vogue magazine.
This is where you realize that you can't cling to your friends, you can't cling to your family, that you're on your own.
Really?
Yeah, and that's scary.
You have a family, don't you? They hear you talking like this at home?
Yes, they do, actually. We talk about that.
Children also?
Yes.
Husband?
Yes.
He doesn't get paranoid?
Oh, no. He's speaking the same language.
Okay. Is he here?
Oh, he wanted to be here.
Okay. Congratulations to you also.
This is where I'm going to be. I'm going to be here. You know, this is where faith has to take over.
This is where knowledge has to take over. Faith. Krishna doesn't ask for faith.
But it's more submission to Krishna and to say, it's your own creation.
Better that if Krishna is giving knowledge, you take it. If the unlimited is giving knowledge how to attain the unlimited, take it. Won't that solve the whole problem? What to do, who am I, where am I, where do I go, fear, not to fear. If the unlimited is giving you knowledge how to attain the unlimited, why not take it? Just like we're reading, Krishna is explaining here that the foolish cannot understand how living entity can quit his body. Nor can we understand what sort of body he enjoys under the spell of the moments of nature, but when his eyes are trained in knowledge can see all this. Someone can read text 11. You still have the page open who has a booming voice. You have a booming voice? I read text 11, China. Question? Yeah, much your question. Yes, and so? Mahamaro. Nine question to change the sala. Explain the Hebrew translation.
The Hebrew translation is for situated in self-realization can see all this here, but those whose minds are not developed and who are not situated in self-realization cannot see what is taking place for the
yes, if you want to see these things clearly, you need qualification. And that's not just an arbitrary thing like, well, what do you think? Well, I think this, you think that, everyone thinks a different way. Who is getting the qualification to see? here we are trying to figure out what is the ultimate reality, but we can't even see the immediate reality that we're forced to change bodies. And what is that system that's forcing us to change? What's that system that's awarding us different types of bodies, life after life? Understand that aspect of ultimate reality, and then you can make further progress. In other words, first we have to deal with what's right up under our nose, the change of the body. A real career is one that's dedicated to grappling with these issues. Why do I have to change body? Why do I have a particular body? What will my next body be? Just like people who worry, what will my job be? What will my occupation be? What university will I go to? But what will your next body be? Once you start thinking in this way, under the direction of Lord Krishna and Bhagavad Gita, then you can go higher and start to understand deeper things about the ultimate reality. But we have to begin with what is right under our nose. This body is forced upon the spirit soul. It's forced to change. You don't want it to change. You want to become an old lady? Why not? Why do you not want to become an old lady? Become wiser when you're old? What do you think? I agree, you're welcome, you're welcome.
I mean, because if your body will change, but if something inside you is growing and developing and understanding and feeling more peace and satisfaction inside, so it doesn't matter so much.
Alright. Exactly. If you are developing your spiritual life in Krishna consciousness, then it doesn't matter what the external body is doing. But how are we going to get that real wealth?
That's why I'm taking appropriate spiritual places and learning and growing.
An appropriate spiritual place is that which presents authentic knowledge coming straight from the ultimate reality. Otherwise, I could say my opinion, you could say your opinion, you could say yours. We're all limited living entities. We already went through that at the beginning. Oh, unconditional love. Oh, hobbies. Oh, whatever. But no one's satisfied with all that. You want a chance to access authoritative knowledge. So the whole point of Bhagavad Gita is that Krishna's explaining when you get knowledge from the source of all energy, then you have real knowledge. Find out the source of all the energy and get your knowledge from there. That is the message of Lord Krishna and Bhagavad Gita. Then you got the advantage. So that is how your quest will end. By your taking knowledge directly from the source of all energy. Then your life is successful. Basically, what Krishna is doing in Bhagavad Gita is teaching you how to be smarter than the illusion. That's what you all are looking for, smarts. So you don't waste your life in an ingenuine way, superficial way, and then you just die, giving up your body. There's no point to it at all. Where you're going next, you don't know. You just have some hopes. Yeah, I hope it'll be all right. Don't live your life in that way. But but it's hard not to because most people are prepared to live in that way. There's a good phrase I like to use for describing the condition or the lifestyle of most people today. Mass consensual trance. Huh? Oh, you, that's, you said zombies, that's more to the point, but I made my life. Masses of people just not thinking, not caring, but as long as they get some little stimulation of happiness, it's all right. Now, I think that most of you, at least, can't live in that way. It's good that you understand that, but now we need to make further progress. We need to access true knowledge. And the whole point of Bhagavad Gita is to teach you that true knowledge can only come from the source of everything. You take your knowledge from Krishna, and then you're like, then you're in the driver's seat. Otherwise, you'll never figure it all out. Reality is too vast and you're too tiny. But if you approach the source of everything and take your knowledge from there, then you're the advantageous position. That is what Lord Krishna is trying to explain. So therefore, rather than us get kind of nebulous and airy-fairy, I just brought it down to the immediate reality. This body and its changes. And you read Krishna saying, the foolish can't even understand how you have your present body. They don't think about it. Yet meanwhile, everyone's scratching their heads. What is the ultimate God? Well, you know, the whatever. Just look right now. You have these bodies. How did you get them? What will your next body be? Krishna's teaching you that in Bhagavad Gita. Very practical. Nothing more practical than that. Start with... That's the problem. No one cares. No one asks. Serious about getting to the bottom of the matrix of illusion and finding out what is genuine, I hardly recommend that you delve into Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita means the song of the most opulent one. The most opulent one is the source of everything. Take your knowledge from there, and then your life is successful. Otherwise, you're just going to be burdened by, well, you think this way, I think that way, he thinks that way, she thinks that way, oh, whatever, who cares, anyway, let's just try to enjoy our senses even though it's temporary, right? But some of you are tired of that. You're tired of it. Okay. Some of you are prepared to do something about that. So we're talking about the real occupation, the real lifestyle. This is genuine. So I would like to leave you there to think about these things. This is our service.
Yeah, it was interesting actually. A lady got her birthday the other day, and it was a classic case of her mother started to talk about her birthday. And the daughter was so embarrassed.
Talk about her mother.
So it's like, she didn't want to go, you know. And that's sort of usually what happens.
Her birth.
It comes up.
Yeah, she did.
Of our mother's birth experience. We're very usually out the door, you know, we don't want to go. Unless we, you know, it's
done. What about your life in the womb?
Most of us don't remember.
Right. You know why you don't remember? Because the shock of childbirth. One minute you're packed up inside someone's womb, next minute you're pushed out, you know, into an unknown world. You also don't remember your past death because of the shock. But just because you don't remember your birth doesn't mean you don't want anyone celebrating your birthday. You don't remember your birth, but you want everyone to celebrate your birthday. So what you remember or what you don't remember is not the ultimate test. You don't remember your birth, but you want your birthday celebrated.
But what's more important than the past is the present.
For how long? For how long? For how long you want to feel peaceful and happy?
Like, hopefully for the rest of your life.
And how long is that?
Well, I don't know.
Right, that's the problem.
God knows, God knows. But also, you want to, like, at the same time, be prepared, as you said, wisely for your future.
So, where are you going to get that kind of training from?
Where
are you going to get that? Right, so, we'll give it to you here. Okay? Alright, ready? Is it dinner time? Well, it's been a very motivating discussion, stimulating. I do want like this all night, but.
One final question.
Yeah.
So how do we attain the spiritual life and how can we walk the path of the Lord Krishna?
You first take knowledge from Krishna. Don't be sentimental. Take knowledge and act on it. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is explaining what to do. What is the ultimate reality? You take that. Apply the knowledge, and you'll see the difference. That is Krishna consciousness. Don't get caught up in this, oh, whatever. Yes, all the, you know, and just flow with it, let it flow with you, and it's a waste of time. Take real knowledge and act on it.
It's very practical. I just start to read it. It is very practical. It's, as you say, science.
You have to re-educate yourself. That is what Bhagavad Gita does for you. So therefore you can come here and we'll help you to plunge into Bhagavad Gita. You can come. You're right. Why should you waste your life being an ordinary person? Very good. But you need support. If you want to be an extraordinary person, you need support. So this is actually also, that's actually what we do here. We have a support group for extraordinary persons. It's difficult being an extraordinary person on your own. You'll get worn down. You'll feel persecuted or you'll feel totally out of normal. But when you mix with other extraordinary persons, then you become strong. Okay. Thank you very much. bodily and the essence of the way. Yes, so said that in the 15th chapter. Vedaish Sarvara Kamehya Vesa Vedanta Smith, Vedas Jeeva Sarvara, which is the time of all the days. Right, so you study this. In your life, this is that. No, Bhagavad Gita is the essence. The Vedas have so much to talk about pointing at the highest activity, going to higher heavenly planets, but Bhagavad Gita is pure spiritual knowledge about the going to the spiritual world. That's why in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says many people are bewildered by the flowery words of the Vedas, which direct them to the heavenly planets, better material situation. They get bewildered by all that. Yes.
That's the reason we hear it.
Yes.
So it means when we rebel, so based on the extent of rebellion, we make the demons human beings or animals, or we chip in with human beings.
Straight away.
No. So when we rebel, we got animal form?
No, not directly. That's a technical question.
Just now I don't know this. Like, because it says there's a book called Human Devolution.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It says that like it could be demigods followed by some other.
Right.
And that comes to human beings.
Right.
So, like, does it mean that if there is a slight disagreement, the spirit could be born as.
Yes, the laws of nature are very precise. Yes, I can see. You should be concerned.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're not having anything to eat.
I just ate. You are trying to make a system. Now, what is the system of this existence? So much trouble you're taking to make your system. But what about the system of existence? You have to find these things out.
you must think about these things. All right.